Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Time now for an enduring segment, and the fact that it is endured tells you how outstanding it is. Ladies and gentlemen, Tuesdays with Neil.
As usual, it's fantastic to be here. I can't get a better intro than that anywhere. I couldn't even pay for that. I appreciate it.
I mean, I am for hire at holidays with family to indicate.
There's a big one coming up. I'm going to need you. My people talk to your people.
To indicate to others your value. In return, I need you to show up at one of mine to tell them my value.
Free of charge.
Okay. Over 400 yards, first time since 2021 with the new coordinator or coordinators taking care of this. In your mind, in watching the Steelers, what was different?
Looking back on it, schematically, it's easy to say they took more chances, which is what Jalen Warren kind of alluded to. And I think that's there, but I don't know if there was a significant increase in those chances as much as it was something that we might not know about that told the quarterback it's okay to take some of those chances.
Right.
And to the quarterback's credit, he delivered on a few. I think he had maybe three of his best throws all season in that game. A much improved, not perfect, but a much improved performance out of Kenny Pickett. Where he threw the ball, I think, gets the most attention. But I would call people's attention to this. The first play of the game, that was not a play-action pass. That was a run-pass option. That is something I thought would be a big reason why Kenny Pickett would have success in the NFL. I thought that they would do that a lot more. Leading into the decision to draft Pickett, cast your mind back to this 2 years ago, the guy that they looked at, obviously not the one inside their own practice facility, but the guy that they looked at the most that we heard about was Sam Howell out of North Carolina.
That's right.
North Carolina ran a lot of RPOs. The way they were building their offense, the way that Matt Canada was constructing their offense at that point, made it look like they wanted to be a heavy RPO team. And with Mitch Trubisky's signing, who had good RPO numbers in his career, probably the only good numbers that he had, it looked like this is what they really wanted to do. And last year, they ran a good amount of them with Pickett, and they had some success with it. Not outstanding, but they were building to something. They didn't do that a whole lot. So in a way, I almost feel like the whether it was Eddie Faulkner's decision or Mike Sullivan's decision, that first play almost seems like they wanted to set a tone with the rest of the team that we're getting back to what we were doing. We know that our quarterback can do this. We want him to do this. And it was a great throw. Pat Freiermuth is an accomplished tight end at this point. They've been missing him a lot this season.
And, no question.
And we've seen that in the offensive performance. So I want to dovetail from the idea that schematically they changed a whole bunch of stuff. I don't think that they changed a lot, but they had a healthy Pat Freiermuth, and they wanted to focus on that in this game. This is something they hadn't had this year. But, you know, the decision to terminate Matt Canada was, you know, I think expected, if not necessary, by that point. Freiermuth's absence did not cost Canada his job, I don't think. But you can see the direction of where they want to go. More than anything overall, they still left a lot on the field. And it's far from a perfect product. It's not entirely about the removal of you know, one coordinator as much as it is. Everyone needs to kind of come together and work to figure this whole thing out. And I think it was a good step in that direction, but they've got a lot of work left to do. The 400-yard thing, I think, is arbitrary in the grand scheme of things, because the reality is they scored 16 points. You know, I know fans are more excited about these 16 points than they were in Super Bowl 10 when they beat the Vikings 16-6, but it's 16 points. You know, they're still a bottom five offensive team. There's work that they need to do, and I'm encouraged with what I saw. There were a lot of good things, but overall, they did not perform at a high level. This is not a great unit yet.
All right. This is a point I made earlier in the show about Phil Parker, the defensive coordinator at Iowa. We were talking about the Broyles Award. And I said, look, a guy like Phil Parker as a defensive coordinator has tremendous pressure on him because he can't give up a lot of points based on how Iowa plays offense. And you have to play defense to how you play offense. He can't give up a big play. They can't get it back. When you watch the Steelers' defense, Neil, what kind of job are they doing playing to what their offense is? And how much better can they be if the offense gives them an excuse to be more aggressive?
You know, off the top of my head, I don't know how many times this year they've gone under, say, 7 minutes in a game with better than a field goal lead. But I'll be honest, I don't think it's very many.
Right.
Because of that, they don't get into the situation that they found themselves in on Sunday very often. They're up enough that they can attack. At that point, that's when you see in a must-stop drive game on the line, T.J. Watt gets a sack. Now, you know, for whatever reason, the Bengals had a slight miscommunication where T.J. Watt went unblocked. If there's an assignment right on that play, it should be to block T.J. Watt. But he's going to make plays. Alex Highsmith has shown he can make plays. They did it against Baltimore when they had the opportunity to. They have the ability to do that, and they're doing this right now without Minkah Fitzpatrick. So put Fitzpatrick back on the field. Give them a 4-plus point lead with 7 or fewer minutes left in the game. You're going to see them take over because they're built for that. They've been playing to keep the team in the game all year. You know, I don't know how many other defenses in the league play with as much close score adversity as the Steelers have to.
Right.
Defensively, they're not getting blown out incredibly often. They're usually competitive in the fourth quarter, and many of the games at this point have come down to the defense making the stop, making the play when they've had to. What if in this game too, another key factor to put into all that, and I thought what you said was a great way to highlight it, talk about the factor of time of possession. They actually possessed the ball in this game. That hasn't happened. They outgained their opponent, which literally has not happened yet this season. They converted on it. They moved the chain. They held on to it.
Right.
Knock on wood, they're not turning it over. These are good things for a defense because you saw it at the end. They've got enough juice left to get after it, to make a play. T.J. Watt is as finely conditioned an athlete as there is on the planet. I'm not, you know, needing to make excuses for him or speak to him as if he's not able to get up and go. But you can see late in games he doesn't have the same get-off that he does earlier in the game. And it's usually because he's had to do so much. They probably subtracted 3 possessions on average in that. I mean, they call it 2 possessions on average against the rest of the season versus Cincinnati. Those are, you know, call it 10, 11 plays that Watt didn't have to play, and he's still got something in the tank at the end to be able to make a play. That goes for everybody else who's there. Cam Hayward, I thought, played a really good game. He was getting pressure inside. He helped set up a sack. It's coming together with, you know, not having to play in such an adverse, dire situation all the time when they can, you know, as the cliche goes, pin their ears back and just go. And I think with that, they are a defense that's built to do that. They're an attacking defense. They get after the quarterback. They get pressure. They get sacks. It's just, you know, when you have to force the punt to give it back to your offense that scores once every 4.5 drives, it doesn't have the same impact as it would if you have a lead and you just ice the thing. All you need now is a first down. I think that's what they want to do. That's the team that they want to be. And we saw a good step toward that this past weekend.
And then they've got the Arizona Cardinals coming up, and they're going to be at home for that. I feel like in a lot of ways for the Steelers, You play Cincinnati, tough game. You play Cleveland, tough game. I feel like now this is, to me, that they have to do it right, but this is the breather in the schedule.
Yeah, you look at it the rest of the way. Just this is such an odd year overall because this falls so well for Pittsburgh. I was going over this earlier. They're favorites against Arizona. I would imagine they're going to be favorites on a short week when New England comes to town.
Yep.
At Indianapolis after that, maybe. I could see I could see them being a point, maybe 2-point favorite, depending. Right. I mean, Jonathan Taylor now is said to be a little banged up. Either way, that's going to be close. That's a road game, but certainly winnable. You know, there's not a whole lot to really be afraid of against Indianapolis, even on the road. They've run that team out in Indianapolis several times. Then you're at Seattle. They're probably going to be underdogs in that one.
Yeah.
Then you've got at Ravens. Baltimore in a game that, you know, Baltimore might not even need.
Right.
So, you know, you look at, call that an underdog game. They're favorites in four of their final six games.
That's right.
Is a team that really, if they hold serve, they're going to win 11. And that's unheard of in my mind. And I picked them to be 10-7 this year. The way this started, the way that it went, the way where it was at the midpoint of the season, it's just funny to me because I'm reacting so much in the moment, game to game with them, that I've forgotten that this is how the Steelers do things. This is really just every year for them. And maybe they can rebound with the offensive coordinator change. You know, I would caution, though, you probably don't get the most honest results the first game after that. Let's see how it plays out. But we did see a lot of good things that would give you the feeling, at least, that if it doesn't work, they went down with after having fired all the bullets in their gun. You know, they at least didn't leave a whole lot out on the field. And that's going to be the challenge for them, I think. But you've got a lot of optimism going the rest of the way. And that doesn't mean they're Super Bowl contenders or anything like that. But, you know, you got to learn how to crawl before you learn how to walk, before you learn how to run. So I think it's now they've positioned themselves well. They took off they took on the harder part of their schedule and succeeded with it overall, despite some pretty tough conditions that they face internally. Now the rest of this, these are winnable games. They really are. And with that, set themselves up to be a wild card, which, you know, come week six, I don't think anybody expected that to happen.
Deontay Johnson, he's helped them since he's come back in the lineup. But the play he didn't make the other day is frankly a disgrace. This is the part about, I don't get it. I mean, Mike Tomlin says he needs to manage his emotions better. I think he has to understand the game of football better. Your thoughts?
You used the word that I would have. And I'll be strong with that. It was a disgrace. It was an embarrassment. It has nothing to do with the fact that, one, he didn't hold on to the ball going to the ground. Now, while that should have been challenged, should have been called on the field, a touchdown, we're 5 years past surviving the catch. That's another story I don't want to get into. As far as the officiating goes, they really need to make that clear among the officials. That is not a thing anymore and hasn't been for a long time. He made the catch. He made a football move. That was a touchdown. The fact they didn't challenge it is a little frustrating as well. But if your attitude following that play is literally to not move off the line of scrimmage because they're running the ball to your side, and on top of that, you can't hear anybody yelling, understand why there are still people moving around, or most importantly, why the whistle didn't blow, to hear anything about his mental state following a play he should have made. I don't want to hear anything about his emotion. I don't even want to hear anything about his conditioning. He's an NFL wide receiver. He's in shape. You know, he's not tired. There should not be a problem with that at all. Conversely, the most inspiring play of the Steelers season, Najee Harris goes up the middle. He stopped, maybe pushes the pile for a yard, maybe about 3 yards. No whistle. Every offensive lineman who was not involved in that scrum came in the scrum and pushed him forward. Najee didn't go down. He kept his shoulders down. He kept his legs driving. He went for 22 yards. Why? Because they didn't blow the whistle.
Right.
Playing. I don't want to hear any excuse from Deontay Johnson. I don't want to hear – honestly, if I'm Omar Khan, he's not on my team next year. There's no way I'm not doing that. It was so public. It was so obvious. We wrote about it within 10 minutes of it happening. It was such a bad look. It hurts the reputation of the team. And I don't care whether your team is 1-16 or 16-1. If you have a guy that is that selfish, that is he's going out of his way to make it known how upset he is. You can't win with a guy like that. I don't want that. I have been a Deontay Johnson supporter. I think he's a fine receiver. I can understand why he would be frustrated this season, but be a professional. You know, and the one thing that I said, everybody in Pittsburgh, you know, wants to trash Antonio Brown for understandable reasons, for earned reasons. But what I know is Antonio Brown wouldn't be caught dead doing that on a football field.
Right.
And to me, that's the standard. You know, if you're a wide receiver younger than Antonio Brown, you did not look up to the way that guy played the game. You're going about things the wrong way. It's inexcusable. It's ridiculous. I don't know whether he's going to get to the ball or not, but that's not the point. It's such a bad look for your teammates, for everybody. Connor Hayward had to come from the other side of the field to make that tackle.
Yeah.
Gone. That game.
Well, it's more to it than that. His explanation, Neil, his explanation is, I was blocking or whatever, I just didn't see it. Excuse me, he never moved. He wasn't blocking anybody. He literally didn't move off the line of scrimmage and then turned around and walked away. He did literally zero on the play. Even his explanation's a disgrace.
Yeah, the fact that he can't even hold himself accountable to that is enough for me. And to be honest with you, wouldn't at all be surprised if he's cut. They're not going to do it in the middle of the season, but I don't expect him to be on that team next year. And he's going to make half of what he made in Pittsburgh elsewhere because of things like this. He put himself into that spot. Probably more than anything, it's the childish way that it's being dealt with. I'll be honest. I understand Seaver doesn't need to come off the line of scrimmage to block like his butt is on fire. That's cheesy. That's high school. That's not really how it works. The corner isn't going to engage any more than the receiver is on a play like that. You know that. To your point, though, he didn't just kind of jog into it and not see it, which is understandable, if not acceptable. He literally didn't move. That's him making a statement, whether that's to Tomlin for not challenging it, whether it's to the officials for not calling it correctly. If that's how you deal with that, I can't play with you. You know, you don't need to be on my team. I don't need a guy like that. And keep in mind, this is, you know, a week after he's swinging on his coach and or teammates amid a really frustrating period of the game. And he's going against guys on defense that, in this case, Minka Fitzpatrick, who isn't even in pads.
Right.
He's yelling and screaming about whatever's going on. Like, I think, put it very mildly, to control his emotions. What I saw is, you know, that's below. There's not a word that I can use on the air for that, but I don't want a guy like that on my team. It's that simple.
No, neither do I. I want somebody who wants to play football that is for the Pittsburgh Steelers. This is not the Deontay Johnson Steelers. It's the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay, so you got to be out there in sync and in tune with everybody else on the franchise doing what you have to do. This is not about you. This is about everybody. So
yeah, you can't play the game as if it's practice. You need to have a certain intensity, and it's not so much the result. You have to be there with everybody else. Jaylen Warren is coming around the end, trying to make two guys miss after the edge collapsed, and Johnson's back is to him. He's not engaged with anybody at all. He's not doing anything. Unfortunate fumble, I will say, it was a great play by the defender. You know,
he
slipped his arm in there. Fumbling is never good. You're never going to excuse a running back for fumbling a ball, but that was a great play. As fate would have it, it hopped right to Johnson, as if the football gods are making sure everybody watching this sees what he just did, and he still doesn't know that it's there. You know, it wears your head. You're not in the game. And the fact that he's, I believe, off the top of my head, he's making more money than any offensive player is a really, really bad look. And if Tomlin didn't say that to him by this point, I think that the implication is there. He's not going to be on this team next year.
Well, you'll be on our team next year because you are greatly appreciated.
Good.
And again, I am the figurative gun for hire that has your back.
And I will block for you any play, any side, anywhere on the field. That's a promise.
Thanks, my friend. Appreciate you.
Thank you. You guys, thanks for having me, guys.
You'll cool on.